Welcome to San Diego Magazine's Happy Half Hour. This is our fun food and drink-filled podcast, recording with you on a Tuesday after Troy's done a whole bunch of fun stuff filming for another TV show. Marie, what have you been doing cool with the magazine? I eventually took today off, but I'm back to just film this because this is my favorite part of the whole job. I love this. I love you guys. How are you doing tonight?
Marie, you take that one. And hello, everybody.
What are you doing, Marie?
We are currently sending the March issue to the printer, and we have some great content coming up. One of them is a story that Troy wrote about what is the future of fine dining. So that should be on newsstands at the end of February.
Yeah, that's an interesting story. Talking to all of the fine dining restaurateurs, you know, about whether or not fine dining is going to be dead, because a lot of people think that there have been prognostications, like in The Economist, in, I forget where else, I want to say it was like Bon Appetit said something too, like fine dining may never be the same, they may never recover. And, you know, talking to all these restaurateurs, you know, what they think the future is going to bring. Some of them are really optimistic. Some of them are like, it's going to be the roaring 20s, you guys. Like, I mean, everybody's going to be like, holy crap, I haven't partied in so long, except for me in my backyard with a cheap bottle of wine and the person that I'm forced to live with. You know, I mean, and there, everybody's going to go out. Everybody's going to go out and want to have like that fine dining service and that four-star cuisine, you know. But then the other side is like, No, I don't know. Maybe, you know, it's just going to be all fast casual and to go from here on out. So, I mean, the jury is really up in the air. I personally want to see what you guys think on this, but I personally think that fine dining will be fine. I think it's going to be the middle dining that's going to hurt the most, you know, like that bistro down the road. You know, I think people will still want those big ticket, like, you know, grandma just celebrated her 80th birthday. We're going to go out and show her a good time. I think those will be fine. I think the mid-scale might be the ones that feel the crunch.
I agree, because if you think about it, the person who can afford a $400 tasting menu also has, you know, couture clothing and Louis Vuitton bags, and recessions don't affect that group as much. But also, that's the kind of place that you save up to go to. Like, you think, okay, I really want to go to Addison. You know, if I save up for this long, then I can go, even if that might be, you know, out of your normal sphere of where you dine. So I think that fine dining can bounce back, because people want it, and the people that can afford it are still going to patronize the place.
Yeah, you either save or you're fabulously rich.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's it, right? It's like saving up for Dua Lipa tickets, you know? What do you think, Ernie?
I think fine dining is gonna be good. I'm dying to get back out there and do fine dining and, you know, little bit of nightlife. I miss my cowboy star and my like nice steaks and my martini and all that stuff. So yeah. I think it'll be fine. For me personally, you know, fine dining is where it's at, you know. But Troy, what did you mean by the middleman? Like, can you give us an example?
Well, the middleman, what I'm seeing in the industry studies is that, like, the bistros, your, you know, local bistro that was sit down that still has like a chef who cooked at a really good restaurant, but he opened this up on his own, but he's got like 30 seats. That's what's going to, like, that like weeknight type of place that you would go with your family for a reasonable meal. I think that's unfortunately going to be like one of the hardest hit, you know, by all of this. Cause I think the people are really kind of getting ready to cook at home. They're better at cooking at home. You know, so they are going to do a little bit more of that, and they've seen how much money they can save. And B, you know, everybody's doing to go. There's a lot more working from home now. There's not as much like people going to the office and then going out for a meal afterwards. You know, if we have like 15, 20, 30% less of our workforce actually going to an office, that means a little bit less towards like sit down restaurants, be like middle of the day or after work.
I agree with all of you in regards to the fine dining. I think it's a little bit different, though. I think that the standard classics, like if you're going to Mr. A's, that's going to succeed. I think all the super hip experiential places, those are going to succeed. But yeah, exactly. It's those places that are like, they're just fine dining enough, but it's a little bit too stuffy and maybe slightly boring. Those are the ones that I'm worried about. While the food might be amazing, I think that people are going to be changing their dining experience from being, you know, like, oh, I want it to just be fine dining, but to be like really an experiential experience. So that's where my brain's going.
Yeah, I hear you. All right. So we got me, Ernie, Marie, David. Marie's the most important one right now because she's got our hot plates coming up, and that's how we start our show. Marie, take us away with news.
So we're starting off this segment with something to look forward to. Restaurant Week is still going to happen this year, and a new date was announced for the event. Normally, it happens every January because that's traditionally a slow month for restaurants. But since restaurants have been limited to takeout for most of the month, the California Restaurant Association is going to move it to April 11th to the 18th. And they're hoping that by then it can go back to its usual format, which is where restaurants offer special prefix menus for the whole week. And the association is planning to have about 200 local restaurants participate. We can't predict what's going to happen over the next couple of months, but I am personally hoping that outdoor dining will still continue and that we turn things around to get the numbers down to allow for indoor dining at a lower capacity, hopefully in late spring or early summer.
Yeah, I think outdoor dining is going to here to stay. I was just talking to Brian Malarkey earlier on today, you know, and he, because of the kind of restaurants that he has, he's got, you know, Urban Wood and he's got Anime and he's got some, you know, big time investors to get him to those places, you know, and he knows a lot of people that know the city, know the government, know the people that make those decisions. And he was actually really surprised that they made him shut down outdoor dining in the first place. The second time. He said the first time it was fine. They totally understood it. Second time, it was actually against what most of the people who know how the government works were expecting it to go. I don't think they're going to shut it down a third time unless things get crazy, unless things get absolutely nuts. Again, they haven't really shown the science that links safe socially distanced outdoor dining to outbreaks and whatnot. So I think we're going to be open, you know, at least outdoor for, you know, the foreseeable future. How are you feeling from the inside, Ernie?
Yeah, I couldn't imagine them shutting it down again. I mean, that'd be detrimental to so many restaurants at this point. You know, I think a lot of us are barely getting our, you know, ground under our feet again. Yeah. And, you know, like for us, we shut down for 6 months to try to help out, you know, with this pandemic thing. We shut down for 6 months and when we reopened, we thought that was going to be it. But, you know, they shut us down again. But, you know, I can't see restaurants obeying that any longer. You know, I just can't see it.
Yeah, and you said that obeying it. We saw a little bit of the protest, you know, happening with some of the restaurants disobeying the order last time, you know. And I think if it gets to a third time, I think you are going to have people that are facing total financial ruin, and not only the financial ruin of the restaurateurs themselves, but the restaurant, the people that the restaurant employs. You know, your dishwashers, your cooks, your hostesses, your bussers, your waiters, your, you know, whatever it is. You know, people are going to get to that point and say, you can't shut us down again. You can push us out to the parking lots. You can do whatever, but we got to be able to make a little bit of money here or a total bailout.
You know? Right. I think with the weather change too, people want to be outside here in Southern California. Weather changes, not going to be able to keep people inside.
Yeah, so. For sure. So I'm glad to see the Restaurant Week is still happening, that they're planning on it. That gives me, like, you know, it's like that hope, that ray of light down at the end of the tunnel, you know?
So we have some other good news happening. This is coming a little bit more from the brewing side of things. So Pure Project is expanding their brewery operations and is opening a new headquarters in Vista.
They are. So they're taking over the old space that was owned by Iron Fist. Iron Fist unfortunately closed last spring because of the pandemic after being in business for 10 years. The new Vista headquarters is set to open next month, and the company has really been on the upswing the past year. They originally started 5 years ago with a small tasting room in Miramar, and last year they opened new locations in Bankers Hill and Carlsbad. So Inland North County now has a new place to get beer, and we need all the alcohol that we can get.
You could not have said it more poetically. I'm telling you. And so germane to my existence. Yes. All the alcohol I can get right now. I mean, I try to balance it out with a few minutes on the bike and a walk down the beach, or just at least in my front yard, you know, with my dog. But yeah, a little bit of alcohol is okay. David, what do you know about Pure Project? Because you're our resident brew guy.
Pure Project is rad. They do so many cool, like unique one release it, like one-off releases all the time. They have some that are annual and people will pre-order them. It is probably one of the better brew programs for just like solid balanced beers, yet still being creative that you're going to find in time. I know that they were at one point part of the whole Igniter project. I'm not sure if they're still doing the Igniter project. I'm so happy to see them expanding. It's great to see when people go from that model to become bigger. Makes me happy.
Yeah. And for anybody who doesn't know out there, it's the Igniter project. David can explain this a little bit better, but it's over in North Park, I believe. And that just helps local breweries.
But so the goal of the Igniter project is something that you don't stay in for longer than about 3 years or so, that then you go and you continue to grow your brewery and get out of the process of being in this rental situation. I think that Pure Project is really on the right path to make that happen in a really successful way.
Awesome.
So we have a little bit more news for you. And some of this is pretty rad. There's a lot of fundraisers going around for two local restaurants who are in need of some help. So we wanted to share this with you, the listeners, just because we know you care.
So Sushi Yarrow and Kearney Mesa had to temporarily close because the owner, Sam, he recently suffered from a stroke. His family posted on Facebook that he's recovering, but it's not clear when he can go back to work. The restaurant has been in the neighborhood for almost 20 years, and a friend of Sam's started a GoFundMe page to help with his medical bills. We're going to include the link to this GoFundMe page in the post show blog post that should be up this afternoon. And the second fundraiser is for the owner of Susie Q's Diner. It's a 50s style diner in Escondido. She's asking for help to save her restaurant from closing. She said in the GoFundMe page, and she told the UT that she's used up most of her savings and she needs help with back rent and bills. So she launched a GoFundMe page asking for donations. If you're able to help, even if you can donate $5, we're going to include this link as well at sdmag.com.
Yeah, I mean, this is what it's all about. This is the exact reason why we even do this show. You know, you're going to help out restaurants. You want to help out our food and drink people. You want to shine a light in our city. And what we thought about during this pandemic is how hard it is to be an operator, let alone an independent operator. You know, if you're facing a pandemic and, you know, in the case of Sushi Yarrow, you know, your owner, you know, has a tragic health crisis. You know, I mean, that's just two things on top of each other. So we want to be able to, you know, bring that attention to you guys. And if you are in the position to be able to help, like, this is what it's all about. Help those little restaurants stay in business, because if it's been around for 20 years, and obviously it's a cornerstone of that neighborhood. And as Ernie can attest, you know, a restaurant is, you know, it's the porch light of any neighborhood. You know, it's that thing that kind of, you know, brings life, you know, and gives like locals, I don't know, it just stokes them with life to live in the place that they live.
So yes, please go visit the blog post on sandiegomagazine.com to figure out where you can donate and where you can help these restaurants, because as Troy said, they all are incredibly important lifeblood to the San Diego community. And the last thing we want to see is them go away. On that note as well, I'll also just say on top of where you can donate to help, please also just visit sandiegomagazine.com, where Marie puts up a blog post every week on Thursday talking about everything that we've talked about in Hot Plates, as well as everything that we talked about with Ernie coming up. And we want to hear from you, our listeners. Feel free to email us at happyhalfhour@sdmag.com or give us a voicemail at 619-744-0535. If you're feeling social media savvy, which I think pretty much everyone is, hit Troy up at Hey Troy Johnson at Instagram, and hit me up at David Eli Martin on Instagram, and email Marie at marie.t@sdmag.com. And lastly, if you do have interest in sponsoring this podcast, go to or email us at happyhalfhour@sdmag.com. And while Ernie's been with us the whole time, I would love to formally once again introduce him. He is the founder of San Diego Taco Company and Salud Tacos in Barrio Logan. Ernie is a San Diego native and his family goes back generations. They first settled in Barrio Logan in 1900. Ernie has worked in the banking for several years before he followed his passion, which was to open his own restaurant. He started at San Diego Taco Company as a taco cart, catering weddings and birthday parties. And as the business grew, he opened Salud on Logan Avenue in 2015. Salud is one of the 13 essential taco shops listed in this month's cover story of San Diego Magazine, titled A Love Letter to Tacos. Ernie, tell us about the taco that you actually are part of.
The taco that you guys featured was our Barrio Taco. It's a beef quesado taco. It's something that, you know, your grandma would kind of make in a Mexican family on a Sunday evening with family dinner or what have you. Stewed beef with different cuts of vegetables, beans, nopales, which is cactus, and a little bit of sour cream on a hand-made flour tortilla. So it's comfort food. But thank you guys for having me on, and thank you, Troy, for that article. It's amazing.
Dude, of course, man. Thank you for telling me your story, which you kind of want to go through again today. You know, I tell me a little bit about, like, I mean, your life. We talked about it, like, where you got started. Your family is old school San Diego. Give us a little bit of idea of the roots.
Yeah, we're an old school Chicano family here, you know. So I'm the fourth generation of my family on my dad's side here. So they've been in San Diego a long, long time. So, you know, they even wrote history books on Logan Heights, and my family's the Becerra, and they got pictures all the way back to like 1915. So, you know, they're deeply rooted here, and I'm just happy that I was able to open up my restaurant there, you know. And my grandfather left World War II from Logan Heights. You know, he's a big part of the VFW there. So the roots go very deep.
Yeah, I mean, back then it was Logan Heights, right? I mean, it wasn't actually Barrio Logan. I mean, that area's changed.
Yeah, it was the Heights. So, yeah, Logan Heights. And I don't know, I think somewhere in the 70s, maybe, they Barrio Logan came about and they separated it.
And why didn't your family leave? I mean, what did your family love about San Diego so much?
No, I don't know, man. I think the Chicano families, they started migrating, and Encanto was a neighborhood, and they migrated to Encanto. And then from that point, they kept moving east. So now they're out in the East County, but, you know, I guess they were looking for more land, more property, but I don't know. I mean, who wants to leave San Diego, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so now we know that you own Salud, which has been, you know, on Andrew Zimmern's show. It's just brought a life. I mean, along with other restaurants, which I'm sure you would give a lot more credit to because you're a pretty humble guy, you know, but you brought a lot of life to that neighborhood, you know, but before then, you were in banking. You weren't in tacos, man. I mean, how did you go to tacos?
Man, I don't, you know what? I took a chance, man, really. I had this recipe book and all these little things I was playing with, and I wrote everything down, and I would ask a lot of questions. I'd go to all these different taco shops or ask my grandmas and ask everything, and I'd write everything down. And it was just becoming a hobby for me. And then, you know, I was in banking. I was kind of following in my father's footsteps. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I didn't have a college degree because I was a young father. And, you know, I was working two jobs ever since I was, you know, 18 years old. Yep. And I had two children at 18. So, you know, I started early. So, you know, once, you know, corporate America used me up, I couldn't go back. You know what I mean? Yep. And I couldn't figure working for somebody else. So I took a shot in the dark and bought a taco cart and put my recipes to use. And first started off using them with my family, and then started catering little events here and there. And then just grew from there. You know, I just put my head down and just kept working.
What do you think? Did your dad think you were nuts? Did your wife think you were nuts?
At first everybody thought, you know, are you crazy? You don't even have any experience. You know, I mean, it's going to be tough. I mean, you don't understand how hard it's going to be for catering and doing all this, you know? So there was a lot of, you know, they didn't think I was going to be able to pull it through, or I'd give up in 6 months. You know what I mean? So that put a huge chip on my shoulder. So, you know, for a while I didn't talk to anybody because I just wanted to work. And then, you know, obviously slowly my family started seeing what was going on after I started branding it, these other things. You know, they started helping me with it. My dad started helping me my son, my 15-year-old started helping, you know, my ex-wife started helping me. So, you know, I got a lot of people more and became more of a family business after that.
Yeah. So with the taco cart, how many items did you start on that? What were your like first few things that made it so that these were the popular items that then like kind of like sent you over the top to open Salud?
I mean, it was real basic. The first two tacos I came up with, and I did it for my son's birthdays with the taco cart. It was our fish taco and our birria taco, which are still on me right now and probably two of our best sellers. So that's the first two tacos I ever came up with. But at that time, pizzas and taqueros were getting real popular, right? They're in everybody's backyards, and you'd go to your cousin's house, whatever, they have a taco man in the yard. And
yeah.
So I was kind of competing, you know, with them. And, you know, it was basic stuff, carne asada tacos and pollo asada tacos, rice, beans, and all the trimmings and stuff like that. But so, that you know, that's kind of how it all started. But the two main tacos that are still on the menu today are our birria taco and our fish taco, which have, with the fish tacos, won many awards.
Now, hey, you talk to me about branding. Now, anybody can have a good taco. There are a lot of good restaurants out there. It's hard enough to make it as a restaurateur, as you know. You know, yeah. And we know that the margins are small. We know that most of them fail, you know, but when you were starting your catering company, branding came really important, right?
Yeah, it became really important because like I was saying, you know, there was all these guys that were competing with these taqueros. You could go on Craigslist and you see all these taco guys, but like, you know, and then, you know, people were hiring these taqueros at my family party. They're like, what's the name of the company or what's the name? It was a guy either coming over from TJ or it was just a guy of a friend. Branding. So I knew that was going to be real important going into the catering company. When I found out San Diego Taco Company had not been used yet, I was like, that sounds like that name's been here for 100 years. How come nobody can take that name? So when I got that name, it kind of started from there. And if you look at our old logo, it shows a sombrero and the Coronado Bridge in it and a bunch of different elements of San Diego. So that's how we started with the branding. And you know, I have to also thank you know, my marketing manager on that too for helping, you know, brand really strong. And Salud, you know, we did it twice, and you know, they both were really on point.
I mean, SanDiegoTacoCompany.com or San Diego Taco Company was not taken. To me, that's crazy. That's like looking today on the internet and being like, wow, Google.com is not taken. You know, that's nuts. You know, it's absolutely nuts. So that helped being the San Diego Taco Company, because if I'm Googling something, I'd be like, a company that does San Diego tacos, and you'd find your company, you know.
Right.
And so And tell me about like Barrio Logan. I know that where you're at, the original, you know, Salud is, you know, it right in the barrio. This is something this is a place that you knew growing up as a kid too, right?
Yeah, I went there all the time. Porky Land was a big part of my diet as a kid. you know, they just had amazing carnitas, and they also had a tortilla place in the back, and you know, I'd stand in line or we'd pick up meat, you know, only or things like that. So, you know, I was always going there, and I had friends, a lot of friends that lived in the hood. So, you know, I was always there going there with my parents and Las Cuatro as well, right down the street. So
Las Cuatro Milpas is legend, man. And how did you find, tell us a little bit about how you got that first Salud place. I mean, what was that building? That was Porky Land. That was your old spot of Porky Land.
It was Porky Land, but at that time there was, it had already gone through like two or three other taco shops, and you know, it was desolate. I mean, it was a ghost town. There was nobody on that street. It was run down. It was kind of trying to find, you know, it's, but you know, there was nothing there to realize it yet, you know. And I was down there because I was down there a lot, and I was working with a lot of the art galleries, setting up tacos places. And you know, I always had dreams. So you know, I dropped my kids off, and then I'd ride down the street, down Logan Avenue, and I was just waiting to see what was going to come available. And finally, you know, that building, I was just waiting for that guy to go out of business. I knew he was going to go out of business.
Yeah.
And the guy that was in there, and he did. And finally they put a sign up, and I called, and you know, I got to sit down with Nick and Zunza, and you know, and we made it happen.
And what was that place like when you got in there?
Oh my God, man. This place was, it was a dump. I mean, there was homeless living in the back. I mean, it was, trash. And I think we ended up dumping out like 14 tons of trash in the very of the building.
14 tons?
It was insane. Yeah, it was insane. And there were people having bonfires in the building. I mean, it was crazy. Syringes everywhere. I mean, it was a bad place at that time.
Yeah. So, I mean, but obviously this is something that was special to you as a kid. This is something special to you as, you know, a fourth generation San Diegan who's known this area and lived in that area. You know, you were like, this is a spot for me. It doesn't matter how much trash I got to haul out.
Exactly. Yeah. I just felt special, felt right. You know, I felt like I was just doing it for me. I felt like I was doing it for my grandfather, my family and that sort of thing. So yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And so what was the first break? I mean, you opened up Salute. You didn't even open Salute. It wasn't Salute. It was like basically a showcase for people if they were going to taste your tacos, if they wanted them for the wedding, right?
Right. I wanted to do this tacos and beer thing. And so at first when I first opened the doors, and then Border X was kind of sharing the room with me. So they were kind of doing the beer at that time. And I was doing my tacos, showcasing my tacos. And then after 6 months, we figured out we couldn't work together. So he went across the street, and that's when we started working on the different branding of, I knew I wanted a tasting room, you know, for the catering company, because I'd never opened up a restaurant yet. And to be honest with you, I didn't really have the gumption.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, I was terrified.
I was terrified, right? I don't know what I was getting into. But, you know, so we rebranded it as Salute by San Diego Taco Company. And it was the, you know, it was supposed to be just a tasting room for, you know, customers to come in and try the food so they can book us for catering events, you know, because, you know, that's all I knew at the time was catering, you know, weddings and that sort of thing. And then once we opened the doors, you know, and I got all the art up and I turned it into my style of what I wanted, you know, just, I don't know, people were just intrigued by not only the food, but I think, you know, once you walk in there and you see the artwork and, you know, and that sort of thing, and the vibrant colors and all that stuff.
Now, what is that style? Because that's a huge part of Salute, man. You walk in a Salute and it just explodes. It explodes with Chicano culture, you know, but with San Diego culture.
Yeah, I mean, it is definitely Chicano culture, but it's not just that. And there's a lot of elements of skateboarding, surfing, everything as a Southern California kid grows up with, you know, at least for Chicano, you know, there's a lot of Chicano art in there, lowrider art, you know, like prison art. And, you know, and I also got my Elvis in there, so.
Wait, you're prison art. I want to hear more about the prison art. That's what I'm curious about. Like, what kind of mediums are we talking here?
You know, I'd get a lot of guys, you know, because honestly, we did a lot of hiring for guys that just got out of prison and that sort of thing, or guys that needed a second chance. Maybe they were in trouble with drugs, and we've helped them get through that process and work for us. And, you know, but so some guys would bring their old work out, or when sometimes they just get out and not buy it from them. So they'd be on like on envelopes that they had from prison, and they do a bunch of art on them, or handkerchiefs that they do collages of art on. And I'd frame them and put them up for them.
Now that's, I almost want to forget the rest of the story, which you could read about in San Diego Magazine, because Ernie and I did a long like walkthrough about how the evolution of Salute came. This to me is fascinating. So why was it important to you, you know, to help out, you know, like, people in our neighborhoods that have been incarcerated, were just getting out? Why was that, you know, so important to you?
You know, because I think because we were so involved in the neighborhood, in the community there at the time, and we still are, but, you know, everybody was coming to me, everybody wanted a job, you know, and I wanted to employ people from the neighborhood. And at one time, almost all our employees were from the neighborhood. Now we've had to scale back, and it's mostly family now, but
yeah,
you know, but yeah, I wanted to employ the neighborhood, you know what I mean? But I didn't want to just give them a job, just to give them a job. I wanted to make sure that they were getting clean and you know, and that sort of thing. And so, you know, I worked with the parolees. So I worked with the parole office, and, you know, I had guys that would come into work and they check in and check out. So they were hardworking guys. They just needed a second chance. You know what I mean? I wanted to give them to that. Some of our employees I put through rehab that had drug issues. They came back and they came back strong. So, you know, that was real important to me, to see people succeed and get better.
I love that. I mean, have you had any individual story that somebody's come back to you and they're like, dude, that was what set me straight, or that was,
yeah,
you know,
I mean actually Telemundo came down and did a whole story on us in Spanish TV. But yeah, one of my workers, you know, I mean, he had a meth problem, and he was, you know, he came to me one day and he told me what his problem was, and we loved him as an employee, as a person. Mm-hmm. And I told him, you know, I'll help get through rehab. And, you know, he did it for like 50 days and he came out and he hasn't touched it since. And he's still working with us. He's been with us for about 4 or 5 years, and he's one of our best employees.
That's the best. I mean, as we know, you know, people go into prison for very different reasons. It's not ever, I mean, not ever, but a lot of times it's not because, you know, they have made intentionally bad decisions in their life. They've been through some shit. You know what I mean? Whether it's a hard life out there, you know, whether it be the system, whether it be parents, whether it be the neighborhood, whether whatever it is, you know, and a lot of people don't give them second chances.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, I've been burnt a few times here and there, but that's just part of life. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So tell me about the time. What do you think the hockey stick went up for Salud? Because I mean, obviously you got the Zimmerman show, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, was the Zimmerman show it? Or when was that spot that you're like, holy crap, man, my little taco shop that I didn't even want to open because I was afraid to open up a restaurant because I didn't know how to do it. You know, my taco shop has made it.
Yeah. We got put on the Washington Post, New York Times did a blurb. And then the Zimmerman thing was just like, unbelievable, you know, to see him walking around Barrio Logan Avenue. Barrio Logan was a trip on TV. I wasn't there in person, but, you know, yeah, I knew something, you know, was changing in the neighborhood. And it was beautiful to see what was going on because I think, you know, Salud was really the anchor to all that stuff. And it's nice to see what's going on in the street. And, you know, there's a lot of other places like Barrio Dog and Puerto Vida and, you know, you got Border X and all these other places. So, you know, I hope it continues to grow and build and we can be something a little bit more organized, like a little Italy, you know, like a little Mexico, I guess, or what have you. But, you know, the street has a lot of work still, but, you know, but we're on our way there. I think in the next 10 years, you know, change there.
That's the question I have for you. What's your hope? Because I'm kind of concerned about Barrio Logan, although I don't think I have a right to be because I'm not from there. You know, I mean, I value that as a, you know, venerated historical home of our Latin and Chicano culture, you know, and I don't want to see it get overblown with, say, people who aren't from there necessarily, or, you know, things that don't fit with our neighbors and the locals there. You, as somebody who knows that city or that part of the city way more intimately than I do, you know, what are your hopes for that? And then what are your concerns with the growth?
Well, you know, everyone always wants to bring up the word gentrification, obviously. And, you know, a lot of the artists and that sort of feel like they're getting pushed out and, you know, it happens. I don't really think it's gentrification because I think a lot of companies that are there are Chicano owned. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're just being successful doesn't mean we're gentrifying the you know, so people have to be able to understand that part of it.
Yep.
And if they don't, we're not going to grow and we're going to be stuck. And without growing and then we won't be able to be like a little Italy as organized or looking as good as that, but not to say that that's the model or anything, but you know, obviously we do want to grow on Logan Avenue, but, the other part of that question was, what was the other part of that question?
Well, I guess you kind of addressed the concern, right? The concern was that people have like, oh, you're going to gentrify it, you know, but you're like, but success isn't gentrification.
Right.
Success
another thing I wanted to say was, you know, Logan High is still Logan, kind of, you know, in a sense. You know, still sometimes it's still a dangerous neighborhood, and you know, where there's a lot to do there. It's, you know, it's old school, man, and you know, there's family that have been there for generations that have been gangbanging for a long time, and you know, it can be scary for a lot of people to come down to that neighborhood. I understand that, and it sucks to say, but it's the truth.
Where are you as far as like working with your other local businesses?
Yeah, I mean, with the pandemic, it's really been really, really tough. And I think, you know, everyone's pulling their hats right now. So we haven't really done too much. But before that, you know, we were doing a thing called La Vuelta, which was like a lowrider cruise. And then all the businesses would kind of get together. And, you know, the car clubs would all come out and support the street. And then we had a big festival where we had music and all that other stuff on Logan Avenue. But, you know, all that stuff is put on, you know, until the pandemic is over. But hopefully, you know, we can start doing more collaborations. I used to be really close to all the art galleries, but they're getting pushed out now. So, you know,
so sad.
Yeah.
Now, what do you see? Do you see this becoming kind of like a little Mexico, like you said? Do you think that it'll be there in 2, 5, 10 years?
Well, you know what? I mean, I don't know if it'll ever be that, but because we're not really Mexican here. What we're doing on the streets, not Mexican per se. It's like a little Italy. We're more of a Chicano vibe, which is a Mexican American, you know. Yeah. So even the dog and Puerto Rico have that same vibe about them, I guess. So I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know, you know, it's going to look, but I would like to see it, you know, get more organized. And, you know, I did try to create the Logan Avenue Consortium and get all the businesses involved. But, you know, there's still like a lot of politics in Barrio Logan. And sometimes it's tough to get things done.
Yeah, everywhere, man. Every single place, whether it's, you know, there's a lot of NIMBYism, and then there's like, I don't even want to do it in my own backyard, you know. And what's next for Salud? I mean, you guys, obviously, you have, everything's on hold, you know, the pandemic.
Everything's on hold. You know, we did have to close down our National City location here in San Diego, and we're really going to focus on the Barrio Logan location. We're we're hoping to take over a little bit more space to be a little bit bigger inside dining once that happens. And I'm still working on La Bamba Bar, which is right behind Salud, which is still a part of Salud, but it's just going to be more like a speakeasy for Salud. And I'm hoping that's going to be like a more of a, like a 1960s vibe-ish, new era.
Are you talking 1960s hippie Chicano culture, like with cocktails? What are we doing?
Yeah, I'm talking about like jukeboxes and that sort of thing. And crushed velvet, you know, couches and stuff like that.
How big would it be? Would it be just this tiny little speakeasy like behind it? Or would it be like, I mean, you're going to open up basically like a cool little bar attached to it?
It'll be a cool little bar. I'd probably have about a capacity of about 30 or so. Okay. And, you know, just a dark place you can come in and vibe out to.
Dude, I'll tell you this. I'm looking for dark places I can actually go into again, man. Absolutely. My favorite kinds of places, man. Dark little places.
Right.
So if people do want to order from Salud, what is the best method for them to order, whether it's to go or for curbside pickup or for, dining outside?
They can actually call in. They can call into the restaurant directly. We also have the ability to do online ordering through our website. And you can actually fill out your orders and it goes right to our kitchen. And, you know, they can go pick it up, which is a pretty cool thing to do. We're getting tons of those type of online orders. And then if they have bigger orders, we have a catering team. And you can email us. And we have it's also on the website, catering, you know, for groups that are bigger than 10. And we do deliveries, we do drop-offs, and we allow pickups. And we still do original style catering carts.
So what is that website? And so people can know?
It's saludtacos.com.
Simple.
Easy enough.
Yes.
Well, what if I went to SanDiegoTacoCompany.com?
It would go directly to Salud.
Nice. All
right.
Yeah.
Well, let's jump into two people, $50. Ernie.
Yeah.
If you're going somewhere, two people, $50. Where are you heading out for a fun little evening?
To Napoleon's in National City. They have some amazing pizza. They've been there since like 1955, and their chorizo sandwiches and their pizza is just phenomenal for the prices. One of my favorites.
Nice. And like an old school place, man. Yeah. It's basically got like the family working there, the family's kids working there, the family's kids' friends working there, probably.
So good.
Awesome. For me, I'm going to have to say Flavors of East Africa. This is a place over in University Heights. If you want to get like, they have some Jamaican food as well, but they also have African food. They've got dengu, which is like a lentil dish. It's fantastic. This is a farmer's market kind of runaway hit, you know, that, you know, did well in a brick and mortar in University Heights. And I would say they have fries, which are done all in like African braised meats and like sauces and everything else, and it's just this, basically it's like a carne asada fries but like East African style. It's amazing. So Flavors of East Africa is mine for the week.
That sounds good.
What about you, Marie?
So my pick this week is a Tasty Noodle House. I really like their beef chow mein noodles with the black pepper sauce. When you get it, it's just a really simple dish, right? You know, there's not a lot of meat, but just enough. And just like what looks like a simple brown sauce. I don't know what kind of pepper they're using or what they're putting in it, but there's just so many layers of flavor in it. It's so good. And they have these grilled pork buns that when I went at like 11 o'clock, they were already sold out. And I've seen online that they're really known for that and it's really popular. So I do want to go back and hopefully try them when they have them in stock.
So do you need to order those pork buns ahead of time then? Is it something you can do that with?
You know, that's probably a good idea. I should just call ahead and find out. But it, yeah, it seems to sell out fast and people just rave about them online.
Look, Troy, have you got them? No, I haven't. But I want to say that we're writers. We're not good at planning ahead. You know, I mean, that's just, it's not in our genes. You know, we're like, oh, shit, the deadline's tomorrow. I got to start that story. All right.
Guilty as charged.
So with the fact that Mammoth, or the, you know, Big Bear and Snow Summit have got a whole heck load of snow, I visited this place a few times and I've talked about it a couple times. And I will not stop talking about it as being the only good restaurant for us to all go skiing and then go to hit it at Big Bear. It's just called Himalayan Restaurant. God, everything on the menu is phenomenal. The soups are phenomenal. The lamb naan is great. And I don't think there's many places where you get a naan where the lamb is actually baked into it. It's like it always
baked into the bread.
It's baked into the bread. Solid. It's like normally it's like you have like a garlic sauce and whatever, yeah. But like, or garlic naan. No, they have really cool varietals. Anything good as well. If you're vegan, if you're a meat eater, all of it. So go there.
You know what? Some of my favorite restaurants in the world have been like the Chinese restaurant. The Mexican restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
Like exactly. There's no fancy name. It's like San Diego Taco Company. You know what I mean?
Himalayan restaurant.
In Big Bear. Okay, we found it.
Best, man. Yes. The best.
Oh, I was going to say, actually, a place here in San Diego called The Taste of Himalayas, and they got great Indian food, too.
Oh, super so good. That's right over by me. It's right over by the Target and a bunch of adult emporiums. And, you know, it's a very authentic neighborhood. And I go there all the time. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you guys all for listening to San Diego Magazine's Happy Half Hour. Once again, we do want to hear from you. Do you have any questions for any of us? Any recommendations for takeout? Hit us up. 619-744-0535 and leave us a voicemail. Or if you want, you can also email us at happyhalfhour.com. You can also hit up that email if you have any interest in sponsoring this podcast. We have a lot of really, really cool sponsors coming up.
Thank you guys for having me. It was great.
Yeah, Ernie, I really appreciate it, man. And I do urge everybody, not because, you know, I wrote the story or because we're San Diego Magazine, but please check out the new story in San Diego Mag about the taco people, because it is my like love letter to the people who like taqueros and people like you, Ernie, who just kind of built a cool taco culture in San Diego, because it's the greatest damn food on the entire planet, man. And you're part of it.
Thank you very much, man. I really appreciate that. Thank you guys all.
All right, you guys. We'll talk to you next week. See ya.
Thank you, Ernie. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
See you, Ernie. You're awesome.